Andre Lewis. Andre, we wish you the very best and thank you so much for your contributions and your work here at Democracy Now! You made us so much better. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Gesder, Noreen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vesta Gadars. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to read the transcripts, get our video and audio podcasts, and you can text the word Democracy Now, one word, to 66866 and sign up for our daily digest and news headlines. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much.
K-Boo. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your Friday evening news.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Guerrillas of Desire book launch with Kevin Van Meter on Thursday, August 10th at 7:30 at Powell's on Hawthorne in Portland. Guerrillas of Desires argues that the left is wrong. The strategies are often based on the assumption that working and poor people are unorganized or simply uninterested in building a new world. Again, that's Guerrillas of Desire book launch with Kevin Van Meter on Thursday, August 10th at 7:30 at Powell's Books, 3723 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month we'll screen the film Keep the Hives Alive on Thursday, August 10th at 7 p.m. Bees and other pollinators are declining at an alarming rate. An overwhelming number of scientific studies link these population declines to pesticide use. Keep the Hives Alive is a documentary film that shows the use of toxic pesticides are having far-reaching impacts on a wide range of environments, including beehives. Again, that's a film screening at the documentary Keep the Hives Alive, Thursday, August 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at the kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Beloved, the open-air sacred art and music festival happening Friday, August 11th to Monday the 14th. Now celebrating 10 years, located at the Oregon Coastal Forest venue about 1 hour west of Corvallis. Beloved Festival weaves together a weekend-long musical story, plus workshops, yoga, craft and food vendors, and camping. Tickets and info at belovedfestival.com. Coming up next is your Friday KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, yesterday supporters and opponents of Ted Wheeler's proposed commission on community-engaged policing squared off in City Hall.
The Joint Office for Homelessness has announced a temporary halt to homeless sweeps during the current heat wave.
Over the last couple days, Portland's air quality has been the worst in the nation.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 4th, 2017. I'm Ruben Lawrence.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund. Beijing has long had the reputation for some of the world's most polluted air. But according to Oregon's Environmental Quality Department this week, Portland has the dubious honor of having the worst air quality in the United States, even worse than in Beijing. Early in the week, the department warned that the air quality was unhealthy for children, senior citizens, and people with respiratory diseases. Yesterday, they expanded that warning to unhealthy for everyone. The increased pollution is primarily the result of forest fires that are blazing across British Columbia. The foul air is also coinciding with a record heat wave throughout the Pacific Northwest. Temperatures were in the high 90s early in the week and set records of 103 on Wednesday and 105 yesterday. Forecasters say that the worst of the heat wave is over, but daytime highs will probably continue in the mid-90s for the next week or so. A drop to 95 is not what most Portlanders would refer to as a cooling trend. Along with the lower temperatures, forecasters predict that an increase in westerly winds will start blowing out some of that smoke.
Mayor Ted Wheeler's plan for a new commission to promote an improved relationship between police and the community came under attack at yesterday's city council meeting. The mayor, who also serves as the Portland Police Commissioner, raised concerns that it would cut the rest of the city council out of any oversight role. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has this report.
Both opponents and supporters of Mayor Ted Wheeler's proposed Portland Commission on Community Engaged Policing squared off over several hours of testimony in City Hall yesterday. Wheeler proposed the PCCEP as a replacement for the now-defunct Community Oversight Advisory Board. The COAB was formed as a result of the city's settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice in 2012. That settlement stemmed from a federal investigation that found police engaged in a pattern of using excessive force against people with mental illness. Many in the audience were concerned by the suggestion that the PCCEP would be made up of 5 to 9 members that would be chosen by the mayor, and that they would meet twice a month behind closed doors, thereby effectively cutting the community out of the oversight process. In response to a question from Commissioner Udaly, Nicole Grant, the mayor's senior policy advisor, provided her interpretation of oversight.
So one of the things, the areas of consensus that we reached with the AMAC, PPA, and DOJ during our facilitated discussions was the definition of oversight, to review and make recommendations. That said, I think, you know, from the common understanding of oversight is to oversee something. COAB was never intended to be a monitoring body. And I think that's the rub. And so if the question is, will PSEP be an additional monitor? No, PSEP will not be a monitor.
The Reverend T. Allen Bethel, chair of the Albina Ministerial Alliance, expressed concern about an officer's ability to postpone or avoid testimony about a shooting.
Individuals are losing their lives at the hands of officer-involved shootings that are always justified, and no discipline has ever seemed to be given to those persons for what they're doing.
But Constantine Sevier, director of the city's Independent Police Review Board, said that he was personally ashamed that it took investigators 6 weeks to get around to interviewing the Portland police officers that were involved in the shooting of Terrell Johnson on May 10th, and he urged adoption of the mayor's proposal.
The concerns that I have about the current deadly force investigation process is that we now have a process where we can be weeks, months, possibly years before the city, as the employer of the officer, being able to interview that employee about what occurred. That is something that violates the public trust, and I support the mayor's resolution.
Before the meeting concluded, Commissioner Amanda Fritz and Commissioner Chloe Udaly proposed amendments to the plan, and it's unclear what the next steps are. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
A new care coordination model is helping Oregon's tribal members access the health care they've been promised from CARE Oregon. Eric Tegahoff of the Oregon News Service has this report.
A new care coordination model is helping Oregon's tribal members access the health care they have been promised. This week, CARE Oregon started its program for Native Americans in the Oregon Health Plan Fee-for-Service program and developed it with 9 federally recognized tribes in the state, as well as the Native American Rehabilitation Association. Sharon Stamfill, Health Operations Officer for the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians, says tribal members usually pick and choose care venues from a number of options, but options can be limited, especially for rural tribal members looking for specialized care.
Care Oregon is really breaking down some of those barriers to health care delivery, and these are barriers that shouldn't be happening for tribal members in Oregon.
Stamfill says this new model will help coordinate transportation and social service needs and will provide culturally appropriate services for Oregon's Native American population. Jackie Mercer, CEO of the Native American Rehabilitation Association, says this program is going to change lives and help tribal members get the best care they can. Mercer says there are many health disparities in Native communities, including higher rates of diabetes, alcoholism, and a suicide rate for young adults that is nearly double the national average. But Mercer notes these health gaps shouldn't lead to the stereotyping of Native Americans.
We're not the diseases, we're not those disparities, we're just people trying to make our best way in this world. So investing in Native people has tremendous positive outcomes.
Erin Fair Taylor, Executive Director of Legal Affairs at Care Oregon, says people can participate in this program without any changes to the providers they currently see.
This program won't require that they change providers. It simply is a resource for people who may not know where to go, who may not know what next steps might be for accessing the care that they need. They can call us and we can help navigate the system on their behalf.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Multnomah County Joint Office for Homelessness has announced a temporary halt to homeless sweeps during the current heat wave. With temperatures consistently above 90 degrees, the authority said that cleanup crews will only be targeting camps that are in, quote, dangerous right of ways, end quote. Otherwise, they will not be asking most people to move so they can remain shaded and save energy. A number of homeless Portlanders lost their lives during this winter's period of extreme cold, and the city has asked residents to treat the heat wave with the same urgency as an extreme cold snap. Heat may not seem quite as dangerous, but the homeless are still vulnerable to heat stroke and exhaustion. Outreach works are carrying extra water and have asked residents to be on the lookout for anyone suffering signs of heat stroke or heat-related distress. Call 211 if you see someone not in immediate danger, but who needs a ride to a cooling center or other help. If you see someone in medical distress, you are urged to call 911.
Today's report from Climate Connections looks at Game of Floods, a board game designed to have students confront real climate change risks. Anthony Lizowitz of the Yale Climate Center has this report.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Imagine it's the year 2050, and you're the city planner of an island that's threatened by sea level rise and storms. That's the scenario in Game of Floods, a board game in which students and community members confront these real climate change risks.
We are particularly excited about bringing it to schools, as we feel that it's critical that the youth of today understand this challenge that they're faced with.
That's Alex Westhoff with the Marin County Community Development Agency in California, which developed the game. Players must decide how to protect the island from random floods and ever-rising sea levels. Some players decide to move their roads out of vulnerable areas like wetlands, while others choose to protect their buildings with seawalls. For every choice, there are costs, some financial, some social, and some environmental.
This was intended to purely teach people about what the different strategies are in a way that's engaging and fun.
Westhoff says so far, more than 1,000 people have played Game of Floods, and anyone who wants to try it out for themselves can download the board for free, then print it and play. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
The man that many call the most hated man in America was found guilty by a jury in Brooklyn earlier today. Martin Shkreli, the former head of Turing Pharmaceuticals, was found guilty of 2 counts of security fraud and 1 count of conspiracy to lie to investigators. Prosecutors say that he cheated investors out of nearly $11 billion between 2009 and 2014. Shkreli earned nationwide scorn 2 years ago when he suddenly and unapologetically raised the price of a life-saving AIDS drug from $13.50 per pill to $750 per pill. Barely an hour after the verdict, he was live-streaming on YouTube from his apartment, holding a beer, and predicting that the sentence would be, quote, close to nil, end quote. He said that if he does go to prison, it will probably be a club fed where he will play basketball and tennis and Xbox for a couple of months.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for another hot day with temperatures reaching the mid-90s. There should be some improvement in air quality. East of the Cascades and Hood River, it will be even hotter with temperatures nearing 100. On this day in 1956, Elvis Presley released the single Hound Dog. Presley had his band record 31 takes of the song and finally settled on take number 28. The song had originally been a hit for Big Mama Thornton in 1953. The quote of the day is from Bruce Springsteen, who said, quote, Elvis is my religion, but for him I'd be selling encyclopedias right now, end quote.
President Trump faced yet another backlash this week after allegations came out that he described the White House as, quote, a real dump, end quote, to fellow golfers at his golf club in New Jersey. Trump called the report fake news, but according to The Guardian, at least 8 or 9 members and staff members heard him say it. Former White House photographer Pete Souza responded on Instagram with a picture of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in the Lincoln bedroom. He described the White House as a historic building and as a place that no American should ever call a dump. Chelsea Clinton also tweeted a thank you to the White House staff for the work they do every day to keep the president's home in tip-top shape and not a dump.
According to the publication The Hill, more than 50 Democrats are now calling on the Pentagon to refuse compliance with President Trump's ban on transgender troops. They've cited the ban as unconstitutional. While the president has certainly made statements alluding to a proposed ban, the Pentagon has not yet received any official directive. Defense Secretary General Mattis was described as being, quote, appalled when he was first informed of the tweet. He had already authorized a 6-month review to determine whether or not transgendered service members do in fact affect the readiness of the military. Currently, the military has no official policy concerning transgendered service members, but even in the face of Trump's tweets, top military officials continue to voice their support for all service members.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News with Art Hughes.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. A federal appeals court this week upheld the domestic assault conviction against a citizen of the Northern Cheyenne tribe in Montana. Leon Seminole appealed his conviction, saying the victim, his common-law wife, should not have been compelled to testify against him. His attorneys argued spousal privilege should protect his wife's wishes to not take the stand. Assistant U.S. Attorney Brian Dake argued the case last month before the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals. He said hearing the victim's testimony is an important part of enforcing the provisions added to the Violence Against Women Act in 2013 that Seminole was convicted of.
The Violence Against Women Act, as this court has noted before, there is a grave problem of domestic violence in Indian country, grave problems with vulnerable victims. The United States government has an interest in successful prosecutions in order to combat this problem. This is something that is necessary for the government, it's necessary for the victims, and it's necessary for the community, and it is in line with hundreds of years of precedent.
The 3-judge panel ruled unanimously that Seminole's conviction should stand, saying domestic abuse victims are notoriously susceptible to intimidation and coercion from abusers. The wife of a former Standing Rock tribal official convicted of sexually abusing a young girl signed a plea deal for her role in the crime. The Bismarck Tribune reports Rhonda Krein Fulbear agreed to plead guilty for not reporting her husband's ongoing sexual abuse. Robert Fulbear was convicted in April for repeated sexual abuse that started when the victim was 10 years old. He is scheduled for sentencing later this month. He is the former district chairman in Cannonball on the Standing Rock Reservation. His wife knew of the abuse but failed to report it. She eventually made an anonymous phone call to police that culminated in his arrest. Navajo Nation officials say the superintendent for Navajo Head Start is off the job after federal officials ordered an investigation for alleged misconduct and misuse of funds. The Farmington Daily Times reports the investigation involves 2 years of Sharon Singer's tenure at Shonto Preparatory School in Arizona. Singer's attorney tells the paper she intends to file a grievance with the Navajo Nation Department of Personnel Management. Vandalism prompted officials to paint over a mural memorializing a murdered Navajo girl. The Farmington Daily Times reports the mural was painted in May of last year on the walls of a tunnel on a Navajo Nation road. It was in honor of 11-year-old Ashlyn Mike, who was abducted and murdered. It included her first name and images of things she liked when she was alive. But it was recently vandalized with what police say are gang-related symbols and offensive images. An Upper Fruitland chapter official tells the paper leaders and community members will discuss other options for memorializing Ashlyn. The man charged in the crimes, Tom Begay, pleaded guilty this week to first-degree murder, kidnapping, and other charges. Colorado elected officials say EPA Chief Scott Pruitt is expected to join them for a tour Friday of the gold mine that was a source of a 3-million-gallon toxic waste spill 2 years ago. Pruitt is on a swing through Colorado to meet with coal industry representatives and state officials. Colorado's governor, 2 senators, and at least 1 other congressional representative are also touring the facility. They intend to hold a public town hall meeting in Durango. EPA workers caused the release of sludge from the Gold King mine on August 5, 2015. The waste contained heavy metals and other toxins that contaminated the Animas River and the San Juan River that flows through the Navajo Nation. The EPA contributed more than $600,000 to offset cleanup costs, but the tribe sued the agency last year, saying it failed to adequately remediate the spill. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University, we know what it means to be rooted in community. You can get your Master's of Social Work and amplify your voice without having to leave it. The part-time online program accepts applications between August 1st and 31st. More at humboldt.edu/socialwork. Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal-relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
NASA wants you to protect Earth from alien life. Should you accept this dangerous mission, it comes with a 6-figure salary and the coveted title of Planetary Protection Officer. While this may sound like something out of a movie, the current officer, Dr. Catherine Conley, says that her mission really is actually quite down to Earth. Her job has many responsibilities. Perhaps the most important is ensuring that future NASA missions don't bring earthly contaminants to planets like Mars or vice versa. Strict requirements like this are the reason NASA will be destroying the Cassini spacecraft in September. They want to avoid potentially contaminating Saturn's moons, which may have liquid water. Sound like the job for you? Well, if you have an advanced degree in physics, engineering, or math, and a security clearance, it just might be. And Dr. Conley pointed out that one of the job's perks was a pair of, quote, men in black style sunglasses.
Israeli police have confirmed that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is currently under investigation in 2 separate cases of criminal allegations of fraud, breach of trust, and bribery. Netanyahu's former chief of staff and confidant, Ari Haro, has been found guilty of breach of trust charges as well. He was fined nearly $200,000 and was sentenced to 6 months of community service. As part of the sentencing agreement, Harrow has agreed to testify against Netanyahu in these investigations. The first investigation focuses on charges that the prime minister has a history of accepting lavish gifts from businessmen. The second case involves allegations that Netanyahu worked with Israeli news publishers to back his legislation and weaken the support of his competitors. Netanyahu denied any wrongdoing and said that investigators were trying to bring down his government. Likud party spokesperson David Bitan said, quote, "The prime minister does not need to resign, rather he needs to prove his innocence," end quote.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production.
For WIN, I'm Joanne Powers. As automaker Tesla is moving to ramp up production for its new Model 3 electric car and hire thousands more workers at its Fremont, California facility, workers are mobilizing to form a union affiliated with the United Auto Workers. The Tesla Workers Organizing Committee sent a letter to the company's board of directors this week with several demands. The workers are calling for a voice in safety policies, as well as issues of rotation schedules, equipment, and ergonomics. Committee member Michael Sanchez has worked at the Fremont facility for 5 years.
You're doing three jobs with one person, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. It becomes wear and tear on your body. I'm going to end up having surgery on September 26th. Because I have two herniated discs in my neck from having to look up for 4+ years.
The workers are also concerned about the lack of a transparent process through which workers are evaluated and promoted, and are calling for the company to cease anti-union activities. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has taken a position against unionization efforts, and Sanchez says Tesla is currently using intimidation against workers.
If you try to go and assemble a union, that there's going to be backlash, that you're going to lose your job or lose your opportunity to get a lead position or more. That's not how it should work. We are going to be the UAW. The workers in that factory are the UAW. We're the union. This is not going to be a third party. We are the party. We want a contract because the fact is that you go out there and you bust your butt every day, all those hours, and you can't get a raise even though you've earned it. If you have a contract and you put your time in, you put your effort, and you show what you can do, that's a guaranteed raise. That's a guaranteed opportunity to move up. When we have contracts, that's where we have equal opportunity. And we know that our careers are just only going to go up, because right now we're all at a standstill. They're the future of the automotive industry. So why are you forgetting about the people that are getting you there?
On Tuesday, a federal judge rejected a challenge to a Seattle law allowing drivers for ride-sharing companies to form a union and collectively bargain over wages and working conditions. The challenge was brought by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, representing rideshare companies Uber and Lyft. However, the 2015 law still remains blocked until the judge can rule on a separate lawsuit from drivers backed by conservative anti-union groups. Misclassified as independent contractors, the drivers are not currently covered under the Federal National Labor Relations Act. If the law goes into effect, Teamsters Local 117 has already obtained permission from the city to begin organizing drivers.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 725,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
An LGBT center in Australia has added a black and brown stripe to their pride flag to honor its Aboriginal and Indigenous queer people. But the move itself was actually inspired from a place on the other side of the planet, Philadelphia. Activists in Philly recently added similar stripes on their version of the flag to show respect to people of color within the fight for queer rights. Some people in the U.S. have taken exception to this move, stating that it highlights more division. But the Aussies disagree. Margaret Hansford, a board member at the Australian Centre, notes that Aboriginal and Indigenous LGBT people still face severe oppression and discrimination, and she wants their flag to have a special greeting for them.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Fox Wild, Isabel Cochran, and Kunsel Doma. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. And the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Ruben Lawrence. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's More Talk Radio and a visit from Portland's Resistance to discuss all of the changes happening with the Portland Police Bureau and their search for a new chief. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the great issues of our time and goes where corporate media fears to tread. At 10, Locus Focus revisits Barbara Bernstein's 2002 documentary, Rivers That Were, exploring the consequences of redesigning nature to fit commercial needs. At 11 on Health Watch, Dr. Marilyn Glenville has a 7-step brain protection plan in her book, Natural Solutions for Dementia and Alzheimer's, The Ultimate Guide to Prevent Short-Term Memory Loss. And at 11:30, it's Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. KBOO keeps you informed and involved, and we need your help. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member today. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Ruben. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody.